Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
In today's episode, Travis and I talk with Jake from the Philippines about Strikeforce Justian and Hunter Clade.
Hello, hello.
Hey, hey.
All right, we got the gang all here. I was only a couple minutes late. I was really, I woke up, I was like, oh no, I'm at 59th because I was supposed to make the transfer at 14. So I was a full, 40 streets away. But it was only two stops, so it wasn't that bad.
All right, cool.
All right, well, we're here. In the sunny Philippines, right at the tropics, sunlight all the time. Is your first name Jake? Should we call you Jake or should we call you something else?
Yeah, real name is Jacob, but folks just call me Jake. Less syllables, less problems, you know.
All right. So how's the Philippines going? You know, we're flying all the way over here from the Philippines compared to our normal spots. And it sounds like you're one of the TOs for the Philippine Kill Team scene. So tell us a little bit about it.
Before I used to be just one of the guys, just your average Joe player, but some are original or founding members or TOs. Let's just say they transferred over to a galaxy far, far away, if you're catching my drift.
A Shatterpoint far, far away, maybe?
Yeah. For those who didn't get it, we're talking Star Wars Legion, the X-Wing, and
Shatterpoint is the new game. Yeah, Shatterpoint is the new game. That's why I was like a Shatterpoint far, far away.
Yeah, it's the new hotness right now, but still stuck to our guns. I love this game way too much, let's just say.
You're committed to the grim darkness of the year 40,000 compared to a galaxy far, far away.
Correct. I am prepared to suffer the wrath of my wife just to play a game or two on the weekends, you know? It's a small price to pay.
And you've been playing Hunter Clade and Phobos, and I think you said that you were playing Hearthkin recently, right?
Oh, yeah, they're crazy fun. No, they're not the best ones right now. I think they might need a little tweaks or so, but hey, they get around. Those guns, man. You got to respect those guns.
Yeah, even if they hit on fours, you still get a bunch of rerolls, and you do have a lot. There's a lot of complicated parts as far as Hearthkin goes. As far as abilities, operative abilities, and leaving things that create auras. Like, Hearthkin are very, very high on the complexity scale, and I'm assuming that at some point they might actually be competitive. It's just that 4-inch movement definitely does hurt. I guess it's 5 now, but even 5 still hurts.
Yeah, I mean, your typical Hearthkin game is your board littered with tokens and a lot of bookkeeping.
Yeah, that's definitely been one of the things that I've seen Hearthkin players struggle with, is there's a very, very high cognitive load between extra strat ploy abilities that are free from your leader and one of your aura droppers, and then the ability for you to move a token from another aura dropper. There's just a lot of things that you have to remember where they place and what they do. It's just one of those things.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's almost like a narrative. You track stuff while you track stuff. But hey, if someone gets to decode what makes them tick, I'd be happy to have a little chat with them.
Yeah, but and how does Hearthkin and its complexity compare to Hunter Clade? Because I know a lot of the stuff that people were saying early about Hunter Clade was that they're kind of complicated, and then I haven't really thought about them in a while. So, what is your opinion there?
Oh yeah. Right off the bat, I would say Hunter Clade is more comfy to use than a Hearthkin. Let's just say you're going to get a good or a bad turn by just by the deployment phase. So yeah, if and on the matchup, I've had struggles with hordes or melee teams, especially on Into the Dark. But yeah, maybe that's just me. However, I make sure I make them pay for it. Like going full Oprah, like, you get a grudge token, you got a grudge token, everyone gets a grudge token. You gotta go cross over this double barricade setup right here because I'm choking full flank.
Yeah, the good thing about Harkin is you get to ignore your own barricades, right?
Oh yeah, and make them heavy.
Yeah. So because Hearthkin are allowed to make barricades heavy and to ignore your own barricades, you're basically allowed to play an asymmetric game as far as the terrain setup goes. So placing extra barricades and making sure they're all invisible as far as your operative concern can really make the melee team struggle to push up into you without taking some sort of fire on the way in.
Correct. I mean, those 28 mil bases are just big enough to make those asymmetrical plays, but not as easy as your Space Marine 32s. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean...
How does the Philippines get organized? Because I know in the U.S. we use a lot of Discord, but not WeChat like they use in Europe, and not... basically, we use Discord a lot. What is it like in the Philippines as far as getting organized? Because, you know, we have our own Discord for Just Another Kill Team Discord. And a lot of Discord organization happens for leagues like Command Point. What is it like in the Philippines?
Oh, yeah. Up here or down here? It's usually you're basically a primitive here. We just rely on Facebook Messenger or Facebook pages. I post event dates. Yeah, because most of the time, people are on their phones, so... Yeah, and not many are still familiar with Discord, so... Yeah, I also post stuff on Discord for those who are outside the metro, because we're pretty much still scattered tribes here. Some groups are like 3 or 4 hours away from the heart of the city, which is where we're at. So, basically, most of the time it's a Messenger or our Facebook page. They just asking you, where we at this weekend? Bam, posters up. Come one, come all.
And which city are you located? Like, which city is the scene located in? Is it Manila, the main, like, the capital, or not capital? One of the largest cities, or a different, smaller city?
Oh, I would say Metro Manila, which is composed of Manila and other major cities, interlinked via train, bus, or such. Yeah. So we're like, every location is like 1 or 2 hours away max. Yeah.
And you have a pretty lively scene. It sounds like people are traveling out 3 or 4 hours to play with their kill team miniatures. How many people are showing up for your tournaments or for your game days? And how often are your game days, actually? Talk to us a little bit about, like, the Filipino kill team scene, you know?
Yeah. So, okay, we started out, actually, we started out with a handful of core veterans from the 2018 edition. So, okay. And then, usually it was, started out like 8 guys, and then the rest went to other games when they heard about the release of 2021. I believe not all of us were a fan of the new list building. Some were still missing the old list hammer, if you know what I'm saying. Then, so one guy, one of our founding members for 2021, asked if, hey, we're forming up a group for this new edition. Would you want in? Hell yeah. I love this game too much. I mean... And then we started out hanging out at one main gaming shop or chain of game shops. But sadly, earlier last year, they don't carry Games Workshop stuff anymore. However, the the rainbow at the end of the bridge, new shops popped up. I think we have like around 20. Yeah, before it used to be a handful, like 3 or 4 across the metro. And now it just boomed. But then people, groups be popping up everywhere. So I'm still trying to reach out to them. Some of them want to be on their own, which I respect. But most of them, yeah, they come here from 4 hours away just to play with us.
Like, and more people, right?
As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely pluses to just getting to play with more people, right? Because if you're playing in a smaller area, sometimes you just don't get to see other teams, right? You get your like 3 or 4 friends. Everyone has the same armies, and that's what you get to play against. So driving out a couple hours, if you have a tournament day, means that you get to see all the other teams, which is definitely part of the fun of doing tournaments.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how far people would go just for just to roll dice with folks across or outside the metro.
And like, how many people show up to the tournaments, and how often are your tournaments?
Oh, we do monthlies, but we regularly play on weekends, which is because we're most of us are average Joe 9-to-5 people, you know, and most of us have families of our own, so yeah. During 2018, most of us are just a bunch of wargaming dads, and now on this edition, the younger dudes showed up like crazy. And, okay, they're digging this one. So, and just this year, the old guard are returning. So the people who I've met back in third edition, some of them go even way from the Rogue Trader era. Yeah.
So it sounds like there's quite a few Games Workshop diehards in the Philippines, you know. The tendrils of GW stretch deep if people are playing back, even back from Rogue Trader, because back then, like, you know, in the late or like in the 90s, it was a very small scene. So hearing that people were playing Rogue Trader, that is kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's good to see old faces, the legends, the OGs themselves. So, I remember what you had here. Oh, yay. Go screw yourself. Give me some dice.
So it sounds like you've been playing for a while, too. If you recognize, like, some of these guys who have been playing for a long time, you know, through different editions of Kill Team, like back when Kill Team was just a White Dwarf game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was a kid back then when the old gang was kicking. But, yeah, it's... We usually on a weekend we got like 8 to 10 dudes, 4 at the least. And then for tourneys, we got as far as 16 competitors for a major event, 8 to 12 on a usual monthly. Yeah,
it's pretty solid for a smaller scene. Are there players in your area that are good enough where they've decided, like, oh, we want to go try traveling to Australia? Because we originally met because I saw you on Banz's server. Banz is the Australian, one of the Australian TOs, and he put us all on a Discord server, and I was like, oh, from the Philippines, that would be cool to have on Just Another Kill Team podcast, just because we like connecting all our different communities. But is there anyone from the Philippines that's wanted to travel for tournaments?
For that, I would need to ask the boys, because, I mean, you'd be surprised who would want to. So right now, the only restraint actually is budget. If we got the dough, we got to go.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to travel to Australia just because it's one of the more expensive countries. But you're close by, at least, so at least the plane flight is not super crazy expensive. But obviously, the Philippines, maybe not the richest of countries, so I assume it is hard to travel out, right?
Yeah, schedules, because we love our job too much, according to our bosses. So yeah, speaking of Australia, I think we have a few countrymen who play. So By the way, shout out to Brostar, one of our countrymen who play in Australia now. So congratulations on the citizenship. He's been like my mentor right now when it comes to running Phobos, which is a lot to take in.
Yeah. Especially, although if you get the new terrain for Beta Decima, now, you know, Jason here would just say, just take a bunch of incursors and start shooting people from across the map. Yeah, I will say, I played a little bit of Felgor versus Wormblade on one of the long deployment maps for Beta Decima. Not looking good. You basically just have to run up the two hot gates and just play 300 as you run up and pray that you make it into their line. So I can definitely see melee teams suffering quite a bit on this new terrain. Now that I played it.
Yeah, body blocking those ledges are just nasty.
Yep. I mean, not even just body blocking, it's just like just having to actually run up the two edges and having only so many platforms to jump across. Definitely seems like it could make it pretty hard to get around.
Yeah, and then like if someone was going to try to jump the platforms and you do body block them, it's just like you've completely shut it down. So like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty troll. I mean, that map needs, or at least the game rules need to be fixed a bit. I mean, nobody wants an alpha strike.
Yeah, it does seem like I'll have a stronger opinion about it after like,
yeah,
after this podcast comes out, because I will have looked at a tournament by the Saturday before this podcast comes out, and I'll have seen probably like 12 games play out. So I'll at least have an opinion. Right now, I feel like, yeah, melee teams probably have it rough. You have to really, really think about where your barricades are going to go just so that you have safe staging points. But even those safe staging points mean that you only have 7 inches of movement afterwards, which is definitely very rough. Like, it's just hard to get around.
True. Multiple choke points, I mean, crazy. I mean, I only got 4 games in, and maybe if one of us decodes how to melee team in Season 3.
Yeah. To be fair, I don't know how many of the TOs will fully adopt it, and we still don't know if GW is going to allow Beta Decima at their US Open series. So until we know that, there's really no reason for people to be stressed about it getting fully adopted. We know that In the Dark is already fully adopted by most of the TOs. Open is easy enough to run, and a lot of people have different map packs, so it's pretty easy to get into. So Beta Decima is really just a question mark right now. It would be kind of nice if we did have a third way to play, but melee teams seem extremely hard to run just because it's very, very hard to actually set up safely without getting shot by some early vantage thing, or you stand around on platforms and take a bunch of jump tests, which is not great.
Yeah, looks with the addition of Season 3, it looks like rock, paper, scissors just got real here.
As far as how the terrain plays out.
And like, so we've got a tournament coming up where we're going to have Into the Dark, Octarius, and Beta Decima. That's this weekend previous as well, from when the episode comes out. So as of right now, I don't know what it looks like or how it's going to shake out, but we're doing a mix of all three.
Sweet.
So the melee teams won't be completely 100% screwed because they've got the other two to do well on, and then hard mode on Beta Decima. And as long as someone can like squeak through, you know, something, they won't be completely ruined.
Yeah, I think the upcoming Bushwick Brawl at the end of February that we'll be streaming with our friends at AGX, that'll probably have all three sorts of terrain just so we can get a feel for how tournaments play out with all three. I think, you know, Can You Roll a Crit, friend of the podcast, he's planning to run tournaments with just 2 out of the 3 types. So I think he's going to do Beta Decima and Open just to see how it goes. But maybe we'll see how the whole scene as a whole interacts with the terrain over time.
Senor Juan Riz.
Yeah, that's right, a fellow Filipino.
Yeah, I heard you would like to visit here sometime this 2024, but yeah, we don't know yet. But hey, always welcome.
I'm sure he'll hear. You know, now that you're on, now that we'll have you added to the Just Another Kill Team Discord, you can definitely ping him because he is on our Discord pretty regularly.
Sweet. So yeah, he only had one condition: no crazy delicacy challenge. No, exotic food challenge. Okay. The deal. Maybe.
Yeah. Should we hop into a little operative showdown with one of your old favorites, the Hunter Clade?
Operative showdown.
Near and dear.
Yeah, so the operative showdown is jumping through a few different comparisons to highlight. Is there a take-all-comer, just correct choice, or is the particular choice more situational, matchup-dependent? The first up on the list is the leaders, Princeps versus Alphas.
Hmm. Yeah, so for me, it's a no-brainer. I could only find one or two situations where you get the Princeps. Most of the time, it's Alpha. Vanguard Alpha. I mean, it's jam-packed with features. He's your counter charge. He's your GA2 engine. He's got everything.
Yeah, you want to talk about the loadout that the Vanguard Alpha comes out with? Because I'm not sure if everyone who's listening really knows Hunter Clade that well, because they haven't been super popular for a while. At LVO, they showed up in reasonable numbers, but just like, can you talk us through what the Alphas versus Princeps does and why you like the Alpha more?
Okay, so my usual go-to loadout is the, the stun pistol. And the goat, or arc pistol, and the taser goat. So you'll be surprised how many people lose it when you stun their their MVP. Yeah, and for the Princeps, there was I remember fielding it once on loot. Or secure maps.
Yeah. The Princeps, the real plus. So there's two different 40mm bases for the Sicarians, which are the larger models with 10 wounds. But the Princeps, there's two versions. One of them is an all melee Princeps with 5 attacks on 2s, balanced and rending, which is fine, but it doesn't come with any special abilities. So he's just like a very good melee piece who can use accelerated agents as a strat ploy to get double fight. But that's kind of whatever. Like, we're not really looking for that kind of utility as far as leaders go. But the Princeps, he comes with a free servo skull, which is one free mission action. So it's an 11 wound model that shoots on 2s with ceaseless. So a bolter with ceaseless, 4 attacks on 2s, 3-4 ceaseless. 4 attacks on 3s, 4-6 lethal 5 melee. So he's a good mixed operative, and he can do free mission actions. So like on loot specifically, I personally had this experience against Marty at LVO, where basically, because you could take a servo skull as an equipment, he had two different models. You could like move dash onto the diagonal objectives and steal them. And I just really couldn't interact with that in a positive way. And that was very annoying. But generally, you're taking the Alpha, which is a 8 wound model, because you have the control edict, which is someone within 3 inches of you and someone else within 3 inches of you get to pair activate. And because you can use this on any operatives, you can actually set up some very clever things like a Vanguard charging. And Vanguards provide a -1 weapon skill aura and ballistic skill aura because they provide injury. And you can also charge a melee operative in. So now that your melee operative is paired up with a Vanguard, they're getting -1 melee skill and you're getting +1 melee skill. So it lets you basically blend almost anything reliably because you'll have 5 attacks on 2s, 4-6 rending with a dork. You'll probably have balanced from your aggressor imperative or doctrine. And then your Vanguard will just stand there. And he could have shot first, then charged, or he could just stand there and just provide the buff. And that can be very, very powerful because that makes your Sicarians basically impossible to fight in melee. So there's lots of cool things that you can do with control edicts.
Yeah, control. The classic Marine killer engine. And then, yeah, as you remember, now it's all coming back. Yeah, you were right. Actually, I did remember your talks back at the Training Point Tactics podcast. And the other one from Micromancer, who was one of the first guys I knew who played Hunter Clade well, and Alex Squires.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those 40 mils, they tag a lot of bodies. So Control Edict... accelerant agents, Yeah, quad kill engine, especially versus guard. So if they leave your Sicarians alone, yeah, it's blender mode. And the going back to the princeps, so yeah, free mission action, and then another dude with equipment, and then possibly a third guy with a comms boost. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be very rough to play like loot or secure, because suddenly you have three operatives who can all pull an objective away that you weren't expecting. And that's definitely very, very powerful, because you're going from a team with good stats, and now you have to deal with good mission play also. So you're getting attacked on by every angle, because you've got fairly good shooters, fairly good melee, but not every operative can do everything. But because you have like three different prongs of attack, now your opponent feels pressed to like, oh, I got to run up. But once you run up, someone can shoot you or you can get meleeed. So it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, not the best of a defense, but hey, sometimes they can clutch it out for one turn because of their doctrinas.
Yeah, the Bulwark Imperative is one of the overall abilities, and it got buffed recently. So before the change in Q4, in Q3, I think, basically you had to miss two saves, you could reroll one save. Now you can just reroll a save naturally, which is great. So because you're hitting on fours, if you're rolling three dice, you're almost always going to miss one. So now you have a reasonable chance at hitting two saves as long as you're not getting AP'd out of your defense rolls.
Yeah, I believe that the upgrade to the Doctrinas is somehow similar to the old Forge World format. I'm not sure.
Do you have strong opinions about the Vanguard versus Ranger split? So for any listeners who don't know, Vanguards and Rangers are the two kinds of 7-wound operatives you can take on the Hunter Clade. Vanguards provide a -1 injury aura, and they have 2/4 rending guns, versus the Rangers, which have a 3/4 heavy gun with P1 that don't provide injury bubbles. Like, obviously you've played them a fair amount. What are the reasons why you would take a Vanguard versus a Ranger? Or do you prefer one or the other?
Oh, it's usually a split. Mainly Rangers I reserve for my Surveyor, the one with the non-obscuring. Most decent Hunter Clade players, they're like a pseudo third gunner. So park somewhere, hopping shots, and of course Rangers for your mind games for the ploys, pursuers, I believe. Yeah, and then Vanguard all the way, because it's an aura that gets people on tilt. Well, can I hug you? No, get away from me.
Yeah, because the Vanguards provide an injury bubble and their reroll. So Marshall Protocol is the strat ploy reroll for the team. And Vanguards get the reroll while they're on objectives or close to your opponent's deployment zone, which is relatively straightforward to do. And then the Rangers get it if they don't move, which is also not that hard to do. So depending on how you layer your operatives, you can get away with lots of free shots. You mentioned that the Surveyor counts as almost like an extra gunner, because you're 4 attacks on 3s, 3/4 P1, but you grant yourself no obscurity and no cover. So depending on where you set up, you can actually doink people from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, on Beta Decima, we do love our no obscuring.
Yeah, I mean, my Hearthkin gunner was giving people enough trouble with just one dude. Imagine 3 or 4 with Phobos, you know? So that's why I'm here painting an Incursor Sergeant.
Yeah, I've got my Incursor Sergeant in the wings right here. He's got the one of the Tiny Legends, one of the New York Open sponsors. He's got the Xenos Tau rail rifle ready to go.
Like, you want this? This was your buddy a minute ago.
And then obviously for Rangers, you were mentioning like one of the big plays for the Rangers is that you have pursuers. Do you want to talk about how you set up pursuers and how, you know, the two different factions kind of play out with it? Because I don't know if everyone knows what pursuers does.
Okay. So yeah, for pursuers, whatever scouting option you use, let's say, well, two, which is a recon and infiltrate, you get to copy paste on two of your Rangers. So it's like a one dude with infiltrate recon and two of your Rangers. So way before turn one, you already got your mind game setting up. So is he going for a, is he going guns o'clock turn one, or is he going to go tap those objectives? So sometimes they can be a bit telegraphic, but hey, might surprise them. But most of the time it does. So you'd be surprised to see the amount of people biting into that bluff. So it's a, yeah. Also a deterrent.
Yeah, it's actually very powerful, because if you think about what Pursuers does, it says your vanguards get your free dashes, so you can have like three dashes on turn one, which is a lot of movement, or your two rangers can now take infiltrate orders, which means that you can have all three of your long-range guns on infiltrate, which means that your opponent really does have to respect where your operatives are, because you can always spring out and take a shot.
Yeah, with the addition of the pressure from your forward deployment from the infiltrator, yeah, that guy's a big troll, especially on vantage points.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, you know, that's a fair amount of Hunterclade. Any other random things you want to talk about with Hunterclade before we, you know, hop topics? You know, maybe what order you do your doctrines in, or is there a ploy that you wish got a little bit of a change? Because obviously Hunterclade are not one of the S tier teams right now. Do you think there's like a change that you would like to see?
That's an excellent question. For Hunterclade, I would say, so right now they're a very balanced team that needs only a little push, but sometimes tweaks can like push them over the edge and tip the balance. If I were to give them a little push, what would it be?
Yeah, I think my major change, if I were allowed to like take a free change on Hunterclade, with that I don't think would break them, would be upgrading the motive force vitality, which basically heals you D3 and making it D3 plus one or D3 plus two or something, just so that your Skitarii. So, you know, for listeners who don't know, we have attack ploy on Hunterclade that lets you heal D3 wounds, which is generally not enough to get you back to uninjured. So a lot of the times you're hoping for a three and you'll roll and nothing will happen and your operative will be at three wounds, which is not great. You go from like two wounds to three wounds, or you go from one wound to three wounds, which is not great. So if you got D3 plus one, you could generally hit your uninjured breakpoint and actually go on to make a useful activation. Or for your Sicarians, D3 plus 1 would mean that if you're at 4 wounds, because you've took 2 bolter hits, you can now make it past the uninjured, get a charge off, and go do something. Because right now, it oftentimes kind of misses the mark quite a bit. And it'd be nice if it was a little bit better.
I totally agree with you on that. Actually, you beat me by a second. So maybe we should have buffed this one. Ah! He got the message.
Yeah,
I mean, there's only one or two instances where that ploy got me the W on clutch. So I believe that was one of the recon tac ops. So I needed that. I really needed that extra 2 inches to get in the deployment zone, or at least within 6. So yeah, that got me the match. Oh, come on, please be a 2. Please be a 2 at least. Yeah. Ah, okay, I got a 2. 2 wounds back. I got my 2 inches back. Let's go. Okay. And then the rest, I don't think there's a... Maybe they're tag ops, I don't know. Because most of the time, people be picking calculated eradication. Actually, there's not many of us Hunterclade players, at least not many mains. I could... not to blow my own horn, but at least the more decent one, because there are still a lot of new players. We're showing them how's this, how's that. Yeah.
When you bring in new players into the Philippine scene, what are you doing to like help those new players pick up the game? Because obviously Warhammer 40,000 kill team, It's a lot of stuff to do. If you've never done any wargaming before, you got to pick up the models, which are probably expensive. You got to build them, you got to paint them, and then you got to learn a lot of stuff. Like, how does the Philippine scene help kind of ease that burden on players?
Okay, so our usual bread and butter is setting up game days. We get slots for our schedules for any conventions, so especially toy conventions or card game conventions, comic conventions. We have, luckily we have connections to at least give us a slot or a few tables on the convention halls. So yeah, that's our bread and butter. And we hold them on numerous game shops across the metro as well. So I post schedules or weekly schedules. If you want to come, we'll bring the paints, we'll bring the models. You don't have them? We got them. Just drop by, say hi, roll dice, see body parts fly, you know?
Nice. Is there like a scenario that you set up or teams that you like having players do when they're new just because they're easy? Or is there like a faction that people in the Philippines really enjoy? Because obviously I feel like a lot of people get into the scene or into the lore just because of some ridiculous story about Warhammer Space Marines shooting little miniature rockets, spitting acid at people and doing all this crazy stuff. Like, is there a faction that you feel like the Filipino players who are new always want to try?
Oh yeah, I mean, it might be no surprise to you, but most of the time it's Intercession, Justin, and Legionnaire, the poster boys. So yeah. And it's funny that I ask the new guys, how did you like this universe? People are saying, Dawn of War, baby.
Yeah,
the Blood Ravens, right? All my Blood Ravens, Justin Strike Force, but this guy. So yeah, as much as possible, I paint up as many teams as I can for people, for new guys to test drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you mentioned that you've been playing Justin a little bit, right? So, you know, I think that's going to be the topic of our Niche Tactics this week.
Niche Tactics.
And specifically, I think you mentioned that you played a lot of fighting games, and Justin is definitely one of those low tier factions where you get a lot of free CP, but, you know, there's not that much that is unpredictable with the team. So what are you finding as far as like niche tactics that you are working well for you locally?
I thought they'd be way at the bottom of the ladder, but surprisingly, they can crush, man. They just outright bully with the sheer amount of wounds. Sometimes even more so than intercessors.
And this is off of the back of Captain Justian and I don't remember what his name is, but the heavy intercessor with 18 wounds on a 3-up save. So you've got the 15 wound captain with a 4-up invul and 3-up save, and then you've got the 18 wound heavy intercessor with a heavy bolter, so double shooting, so 5 attacks on 3s with 18 wounds. Tell us a little bit about how you're setting them up and how you're able to line them up against your more experienced players. Because obviously, if it's a newer player, we would expect that Justin might be a little bit scary just from the sheer wound count. But against more experienced players, what are you finding works well with them when you're bullying people?
Yeah, right off the bat, I mean, 3 dudes hitting on 2s is no joke. And those big bases, they tag a lot of bodies. So, and you can just park your heavy intercessor beating his monkey chest on the top of a vantage point. Come get some! Da, 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 da. And then the usual intercessor 4-shot play, which is a shoot, Overwatch, and then possibly Wrath of Vengeance. So yeah, that one CP on your back pocket is for the MTG players out there, it's like your counter spell, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, do you feel like you've gotten value out of the team because of your fighting game background, just because you have an extra 4 options that your opponent doesn't normally think about, right? Extra Angel of Wrath, extra fight at the end of turning point. an extra, you know, there's a whole bunch of other random strat ploys or just extra CP rerolls, so you can make your shooting that much more consistent. Because I'm sure that Jason would love to hear about how all these purity seals are doing, basically.
Yeah, I mean, those gotchas, those tactical ploys, they keep your opponents honest. I mean, but you need to be careful with the deployments. Some, if you get alpha striked on turn one, you're probably doing it wrong. I believe this is true among all elite teams. And you gotta abuse that non-obscuring shot from your sniper. Yeah, you might be surprised, but I've never lost against a commando player with Justin. So I don't know if it's a hard counter. Same goes with the intercessors. I mean, I tell my boys that there is no top tier team, only a top tier player. So it could go any way. And this is a dice game. So yeah. But if you're relying purely on dice, then think again.
So have you found any issues with Justian's lack of melee operative? Because definitely one thing that I noticed when the team got previewed is you have your leader and you have one other assault intercessor, and it's not that much melee. So you're very much a shooting team. Have you run into issues with people hitting your melee operatives, deleting them, and then your shooting operatives not able to clean up?
I would say I did experience that with Felgor Ravagers. So yeah, but I mean, it gets duh. But most of the time, I'm just making the most of out of tactical doctrine. They can go in your face all the time. Just present a solid half-court presence. That usually does the trick. And sometimes I even get to their half of the board on their deployment zone. They're that efficient with the CP. You can just spam rerolls like nobody's business. They're not that CP hungry most of the time. So maybe it's because that back pocket Wrath of Vengeance is just keeping people honest. And they have the wounds for it. Yeah.
When it comes to the way that you deploy, like, how many, do you have like a formula for how many engage orders you kick off with?
Most of the time I ask myself one important question. Does this team have a plasma? Because like every marine team does, plasma is like, yeah, your kryptonite. So if you can position your main dudes or your main push anywhere away from the cone of your enemy's plasma gunner. And then I also ask the second question, can he comms buff that plasma guy? You know, now, otherwise I'll just be doing a 4-4 plan tagging objectives by turn one. But if presented a very juicy target for alpha strikes, like your sniper's hyper frag rounds, yeah, I mean, at least that would keep them in check. Number one bane of their existence is the spotter from the vet guard. Somebody needs to fix that one. Otherwise, yeah, they can creep up the board pretty safely. They've got the moons for it. I try to be as aggressive as I can, because with six bodies, you're going to need to cover as much ground, like a safety net or a wall of gunfire. Come turn two, which is probably your blowout round, or turn three. Yeah.
You're playing a relatively defensive first two turns so that you can prep up for people being in range for turn three and four, which is actually good, because I feel like a lot of players play for very much on turn two popping off, but it sounds like you're going for a turn three pop off.
Yeah, maybe it's because of the Phobos player in me. I don't know.
Well, I mean, one of the neat things is that Brother Flavian, when he goes to shoot on his turn and you adjust optics, when you Angel of Wrath and die, and you can still shoot with no obscurity. So basically, you could just tag someone totally unrelated and flick the gun over and just pop another dude the opponent's not ready for. So have you found value in doing like a trick like that? Because adjust optics is, for the whole turning point, you are not obscured. So right before you die, you just turn around, quick scope some other dude on the other end of the map.
Oh, yeah. And even sometimes a little psychological warfare goes a long way. I'd be picking up a dice and doing this. And then not really popping it off. That's golden. So
a little bit of baiting on your opponents.
Yeah. And then what else? Sometimes if I could get a lot of alpha strikes turn one, I would, especially versus melee teams or teams that have low damage guns, which is not a lot. So
yeah. Most teams with low damage guns have a melta or a plasma in the background, so you really can't just ignore what they're doing.
Yeah, and I noticed majority of the mid-range teams, or your 10-man teams, have a lot of stuff for hunting down Marines. So I try to be careful with that. But most of the time, if I can go aggressive or make a hard push turn one to set up for blowout turns, I would.
Still finding a lot of value in Brother Acule's, you know, 5-wound heavy bolter. You're like move dashing into a point, and then the following turn climbing onto a vantage, just mowing people down, and just depending on those 18 wounds to get you just barely in range to be able to survive a turning point.
Yeah, almost every win feels like a dirty win. I don't know, maybe it's just me.
I don't know, you know, Jason's out here, he went, you know, 5-0, 5-2-2 at LVO. Did you feel like you were, those wins were dirty wins? I know when me and Jason talked about it, there are a couple games that he felt like were blowouts, and I'm pretty sure that when you get a blowout game with Space Marines, it feels dirty because you've got like four Marines, your opponent has like one model left.
Yeah, saw the interview, man, good job.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Intercessor. I mean, Intercessors feel pretty clean and straightforward to me. It's just like, and like, I put a lot of Marines on engage, and I just like push super hard. And like, a plasma isn't even always going to kill an Intercessor. But the way I look at it, if you push hard enough, you can pretty much just let like three Intercessors die for hardly anything. And you know, if you can shoot me and I can shoot back, I'm totally fine with it. Like, if you, you know, with Justian, I feel like I would do the same thing. Have the sergeant run out there, shoot somebody. If he gets shot with the plasma, he's hitting on twos when he dies. So I'll just be like, as long as you use the no fear, which, you know, you might as well. You've got all this extra CP. I feel like I would just use that extra CP to no fear every turn, and then just run around and you can be extra aggressive, because like sometimes with Intercessors I wouldn't do that on turn one because you'll run out of CP, but if you got the extra and they shoot you, you can just start the fight on turn one.
Oh yeah. And the secret sauce to Justian and Intercession, I notice, is their low cognitive load. It's like a breath of fresh air when you come from really complex teams after playing a whole lot of games with Hearthkin or Wormblade or Phobos. It's refreshing.
It is, yeah. Yeah, that was the whole reason I chose Intercession for LVO, because it was 9 games in 3 days, and I was like, it's going to be nice and chill just to be like, run, Chainsword, Doom Guy.
Yeah. I mean, cognitive load is a thing. I remember one dude playing Warp Coven. Yeah, he after the tournament, he was not himself. So it was funny. I mean, dude, you've been holding that burger for an hour. What are you? You all right?
Fully cooked at that point, huh?
Yeah.
1,000-yard stare just from playing Warp Coven for a tournament.
Yeah, if you can play it right, hats off to you with Warp Coven.
Yeah, hopefully in the near future we'll try to find a Warp Coven player to get on here just so that we can talk about their reasonable record, I think, as far as like tournament records go. I think they've performed okay in a couple tournaments, and we can probably catch a hold of those people and see what they're doing different. Because the team is very high cognitive load, unlike Justian, who's just out here with raw stats and flexing.
Yeah, pure beef.
I mean, you got a plasma fist, a plasma pistol, a power fist, a four of invuln, and a will to punch your opponent to death.
Yeah, the amount of salt after an opponent exhausts all his resources to take down your captain, and you'd be like, okay.
And just roll, roll your way out of it with your four of invuln.
Yeah.
They're like, I hit you four times with plasma. All right, well, two saves. I'm going to come in and touch you now. Like, please, no.
Yeah, it's pure hilariousness.
Just another Space Marine kill team.
I mean, you've also got a smoke grenade, which the Intercession do not get access to. So having Brother Thysor out here with a single smoke grenade does allow you to move up safely for your captain, right? Like, you chuck the smoke grenade, your captain runs into it, and then the following turn, you're basically almost guaranteed to survive any AP2 gun, and now suddenly, Captain Justian is in your opponent's back line, just taking heads and popping off plasma shots.
Yeah. I remember one scenario with a smoke grenade. Most of the time, people are surprised. What? Smoke grenade? And then behind that smoke grenade, I've got three dudes stacking up like a SWAT team, single file. And I know that they don't, their guns can't hurt me. Turn two. Okay, go. Move.
Yeah, because really, like, one of the big things that's nice for Space Marines is you really don't care about frag grenades. Like, 2, 3, 2, 4, like, against your 3-up save with, like, 18 wounds, you're like, I can take one frag grenade before I jump you. Unless you're getting a plasma cannon from the Inquisitorial agents, then you die, and that's bad. So don't stack three models against that gun specifically. But against everyone else, you can take one frag grenade, and then suddenly, you know, Captain Justian's out here pushing people's shit in.
Yeah, I was actually just messing around with that. I'm just trying to experiment with that kind of bait. If I could get that guy out in the open, you know,
like how much fire Captain Justian can take with his 4-up invuln.
Yeah, and you did mention relation to fighting games. So I was able to answer that a while ago. So yeah, fighting games, it's more soft skills and spacing. So, for example, in fighting games, you master the neutral. If people are familiar with that, it's similar to your spacing or threat ranges in Kill Team. Yeah, and then your gotchas, similar. It's a mind game usually.
Like, what kind of mind games are you expecting that you get out of, you know, something like Strikeforce Justian? Because you have extra CP, are you baiting people into thinking you're always going to Angel of Wrath, or what kind of mind games have you been getting out of it? Or it doesn't even have to be Strikeforce Justian. Any mind games, basically.
Oh yeah. I'll start with the Trixier teams. Most of them, Phobos and Hearthkin. They're not used to having heavy barricades and climbing gear. So yeah, that catches them off guard a lot, especially non-obscuring shots for both teams. And then here's one good scenario: sneaky get from a sniper boy. He's on a vantage point, sneaky get. Oh, okay, I've seen this before. I pop one CP to redeploy one of my infiltrators and my Reaver Sergeant. So, Turn one. Okay, sure, you take the point, but first I'm going to Omni Scrambler your sniper. Make sure he stays put and be a good boy. Then there goes the sergeant. Flying sergeant.
Oh, yes. Now, especially because of the nerf on commandos, if your opponent is going to place a sniper boy a little bit too close to your deployment, now you can basically guarantee that someone gets in the sniper boy's face and fights them.
Yeah, free sneaky gets back then made Hunter Clay jealous a lot, at least mine. If I could read four deploy three of my dudes, wouldn't...
Well, not only that, you know, old commandos could also flip orders, which, you know, now they can't do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, orcs still get to do a couple aggressive actions, whereas the Hunter Clan is like the little dog. He's still got to run around and just do mission objectives and run away.
Yeah, I'm actually painting up mine next in a couple of hours because I want to find out what makes them tick. They're cool.
The commandos.
Yeah, but usually I pick my teams because of the rule of cool. I care about looks first. And then rules later. Oh, you know, they're just cool on paper. I just thought they'd be fun to paint.
What drew you into Strike Force Jessian then? The captain or like brother Flavian, everyone's favorite operative?
Yes. But yeah, I had a bunch of spare marine bodies and bits stored from my old Kill Team 2018. Bin. So yeah, okay, it's time to saddle up, boys. You're playing again because I benched them in 2021, so yeah, might as well, you know. Yeah, surprisingly they're crazy fun. I expected them to be just my demo team or my introductory team. Turns out didn't know that they would crush sometimes.
I feel like this is just the beginning of Jason going off into his local community now and just slapping people with the power fist.
Yeah, I am like, to the thing I'm going to tomorrow, I'm like, do I bring Justin?
Yeah, I mean, it does sound kind of neat. You know, having the mix of two up on Intercession means that anytime you're double firing or double fighting, like, you just have a lot more reliability. Because obviously everyone has played Intercession and missed, you know, four dice on threes. You're like, I missed two shots. You're like, yeah, that's rough. But if you're on four dice on twos with a reroll, basically you're probably going to hit all four times, which can be pretty rough. It's not quite Doombolter rough, though, Jason.
The sniper, like, is pretty close. And, like, he can ignore obscuring, which is pretty much what I was doing with the Auspex already anyways. So he kind of fills that role. And then having some, like, the chainsword marines with to be missiles, the captain can, you know, maybe pull as much as two chainsword dudes.
Yeah, five dice on threes, 5-7 brutal with a reroll. This is a lot of dice and it's all brutal. So your opponent, all they're going to be able to do is maybe parry off one time or just take 1 jillion damage, basically.
And he fights twice, so just jump into a pile. And like Jake said, he can tag a lot of bodies with that big base. And yeah. And then, like, someone's got to be the dork that stands out in the open, so it's obviously going to be the chonky boy with 18 wounds. I feel like I'm just, like, put him on engage, like, dash him onto just the best line of sight that you can possibly get from there, and then just people can pop out and shoot at him, and then you're just like, well, if he dies, he dies, and if he doesn't, that's cool, too. And then sprint down the board with everyone else and give him the bonk.
Yeah, rodeo clowns.
Are you in the Philippines? Are you guys playing the heavy intercessor with 5 attacks or 4 attacks on the heavy bolter? So the American card, or like the English cards, came out, I think, with 4 attacks, and the Japanese cards came out with 5. And the core rule book when the game first dropped had heavy bolters at 5 attacks. And most heavy bolters are 5 attacks, but I'm just curious, like, do you guys play 4 or 5 attacks?
Yeah, for the first half of my Justin's lifespan, we were doing 4. And then some guy from one of our Japanese dudes, and, hey, I thought they had 5. See the card? Then, Wait a sec. Did I check the compendium? Oh, okay. So, I made a general consensus to our group. Are you guys cool with me shooting 5 rounds or 4 rounds on the heavy intercessor? So, and they're like, yeah, 5. Let's go. I mean, it's on the compendium. Second question. Now that we're seeing Justian on the tier lists, I believe it's a clear indication that they're being allowed TAC ops.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think we've always... So even in America, they were allowed at the U.S. Opens, and they were allowed only the TAC ops that Intercession Squad had. So I think it is Seek and Destroy and Security. So that's what that's what I would expect. Were you guys playing them without them for a while?
Yeah. I did let them know beforehand.
Mm.
And they were cool with it. I mean, yeah, justice for Justian.
Yes. So I think, for anyone looking to pick up Justian, we would expect that in most tournaments, you are allowed security, seek and destroy. Basically, they are intercession, and you give up chapter tactics and equipment because the equipment is baked into your operatives and you have extra CP to use shoot on death, and they shall know no fear, because it sounds like Jason is out here knowing no fear every turn, even on turn one.
You gotta.
Mostly so that you can shoot on death at full ballistic skill, right?
Correct. I mean, especially on Into the Dark, where you just one up, move dash guard with your heavy weapons. Let's see you try your luck, boy. I mean, it scares most people off. I mean, 15 to 18 wounds, that's a lot to chew through,
And it your is back definitely pocket. A lot to chew through, yeah. Yeah, so I think heavy bolters pretty much universally across every other team except for Strikeforce, Justian, and English are 5 attacks on 3s, so I kind of expect that it's also 5 attacks on 3s. There's just never been a confirmation one way or the other for whatever reason, which is very annoying.
Yeah. And speaking of communities across the globe, I'm surprised I saw a small community in Kill Team Vietnam and Cuba. I've seen a few floating around, and what else was? And then Japan. Yeah,
we visited Japan with Paul, and I think David is the head of the scene, but Paul came by to talk about the Void Dancer troop a little bit. I don't know if you caught it later last in the end of last year. It's actually up on our YouTube, on Just Another Kill Team YouTube, actually. So I think that's episode 41.
Okay, I will look that up. Because, one of our boys, who's half Japanese, so went back to Japan. I thought he'd be there in the, I believe, the Yokohama area. Man, their shops, their Warhammer shops look awesome. I've seen the photos. Wish we had those here.
Well, it's just a slow and steady growth, right?
Yeah. A man can dream. So, where are we usually...
Do you have any Filipino tournaments coming up in the near future that you want to kind of talk about, just in case anyone in the Philippines hears this or anyone is planning to visit the Philippines? Tell us a little bit about the upcoming tournaments or play days.
Okay. So, hopefully by the end of February. I haven't posted a date yet, but I'll be I'll be writing something up, and we have possibly a kill team league, your weekly play X number of games, get some free stuff, or win stuff from the shops. At least that's our plan, to rein in more players. For tournaments, sometimes I write up crazy stuff regarding rules. So during the year ender of 2023, we pulled off an all compendium tournament, but all the terrains have those crazy additional rules that people don't normally use, like your dangerous terrain, noxious, the one that gives CP and invulns. On a random, we roll a d6, stuff goes at random. Imagine that, exploding objectives,
Oh, this is basically the White Dwarf came out, I think, in the middle of last year and added rules for like an inspiring statue, smokestacks, and all the other crazy stuff. And I think more recently, I think there was the Jungle World, like the Death World terrain. Are you planning to put the Death World into this crazy compendium rules pack as well?
Not yet, but we're planning to. So we're going to get in touch with the Warcry people. Maybe they have those. I believe they have had it back in Kill Team 2018. I'm not sure. The old Dark Elder box. So, yeah. Maybe on the next events, we'll add the jungle missions.
I think the Jungle World terrain is like, you'll have parts of the terrain where if you land next to it, you roll a d6, and if you roll a 1, the plant will like deal d3 plus something wounds. So it's just like a Death World where everything is miserable, and if you touch something, it can take a bite out of you.
Yeah, so it's like the local boys are like, isn't this like your tournament from last year where everything's trying to kill you? Oh, okay, yeah, jungle missions. You're doing it right, GW.
Yeah. What about you, Jason? I know you mentioned that you have a tournament coming up. It'll be done by the time the podcast comes out, but are there any upcoming tournaments that you want to talk about for anyone who's listening from Minnesota?
Yeah. So the Saturday after this comes out, we're going to have a small little thing. It's part of our initiative to practice for Adepticon, because there's a few of us that are going to go to that. So it's just bring your worst and let's try to level up together to get ready for Adepticon. And then the week after that, my friend Lee is going to be hosting a doubles tournament. And that is going to be a little bit more of like a zany thing. So yeah, that should be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, obviously, I have the Bushwick Brawl at the end of February. It'll be a stream tournament where we'll have some custom boards up on stream, just so, you know, something cool is up on the stream. And we'll have people talking through their four rounds of gameplay tournament. So if anyone is curious about what New York's top level scene looks like, that'll be the place to tune in.
Cool. Okay, anyway, for my future events, I'll just be posting them on our Discord in our Facebook page.
And we'll have links to your Discord and your Facebook, you know, in the show notes in case anyone is curious and wants to take a little look at the Manila Kill Team scene, or like the Manila metro area, I guess.
Will do. Okay.
Alrighty. Well, thanks, listeners, for coming by and taking a visit to the Philippines and checking out Manila with Jake.
Yeah. By the way, just a little shout out to my boys.
Oh, yeah.
So, without them, this would not happen. I mean, I can't run the show by myself. Starting off with Johan, my eye in the sky, the guy from 4 hours away, but still manages to get to our games. Thank you. And Danila, our player from Russia. So yeah. Zdarova, drugoy. Okay. Who else? Nico, a resident goat herder and melee guy. Danila is also another melee specialist. So, one of our newer members, Taki, Jack Breacher, because his name is Jack, and he's a Breacher main. Who else? Yeah, and a whole lot more. So the Baguio and Antipolo crew, which is the other teams from like 5 hours away, 2 hours away. Yeah, shout out to you guys. Thanks for coming to our events back then. And thanks for welcoming us to your tournament. Okay. So I guess to those I didn't remember, apologies. And thank you to the local gaming shops who hosted us. So I'll just name the top five, or top three at least. Hobby Factory, Nook, what else? Gamer Shop. And from where it started, where we're back to our roots, Mutual Grounds, thank you for hosting us. I'm sorry if things didn't work out, but memories will stay alive in our hearts. Thank you.
I mean, make sure to send us links to any of the shops that you want to help support, and we'll drop links to them in our show notes. Obviously, not everyone is going to visit Philippines, but if they do, it'd be nice to know where to get some games of Kill Team in.
Oh, dude.